The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 25th of January, 2021. On the podcast today, Andrew Knott, CEO of Savannah Energy, talks through their full year 2020 trading update and guidance issued for 2021. Also on the podcast, businessman, serial entrepreneur, and high net worth investor John Story discusses three of his investments, which include Escapant, where he's at NED, Zoetic, and Gfinity. Plus, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about Watches of Switzerland, Vissarion, and Lexington Gold. And as always, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. Plus, as always, if you go to the main page there, that's voxmarkets.co.uk, you see lots of other content. In fact, there's a Capital Market Summit with Paul Hill, Justin Urquhart Stewart's on that, Martin Gilbert, David Buick, and Chris Watlin. Check that out. Lots of other content right there, including our COVID-19 index. Let's have a look. Biggest rise of the day is Gene Drive, up 24%, 52 pence. Biggest faller, Tizian Life Sciences, down 6.8% to 150. Check that out, voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andrew Knott, CEO of Savannah Energy. SAVE is ticker. Andrew, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much, Justin. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I'm just reading through your financial trading update and guidance issued for full year 21, of course, and sounding very bullish there, and reason to be, I think, and the share price is looking good as well. So before we get into that, Andrew, for people maybe not so familiar with the business, just give us a brief overview of what you're about, please.
Okay, so Savannah is a leading African-focused British independent energy company. We have two projects. One is a highly cash generative project in Nigeria. The other is an exploration development appraisal project in Niger, both of which are very significant for the countries in which we operate, and both of which we have strong plans to deliver significant growth to the business over the course of the coming months and years.
Excellent stuff. Okay, so let's get into it. Let's start off with some financial highlights, if you could, Andrew. Take us through some of those.
Okay, so yeah, this morning we've published the unaudited highlights for 2020. I think the key thing to say is that all of the principal metrics are moving in the right direction. So our total revenues number, we've reported up 23% year on year. Cash collections up 11% year on year. Cash balance has more than doubled. The net debt position is reduced by 16%. Our leverage is down significantly. Our interest coverage ratio has improved significantly. And if you take the midpoint of our cost range against the revenue guidance, it's clear that we're seeing an improvement in the EBITDA in EBITDA margin, which was already sitting at 76% in 2019 on an underlying basis. So what we're really demonstrating with this morning's release is that the promises that we were making at the time when we did the Seven Energy acquisition of our Nigeria, of the Nigerian business, we're really delivering on. And the metrics that we're reporting this morning clearly and unambiguously demonstrate that. And I think for those that are new to the business, it's probably important to say that our revenues are derived almost exclusively from fixed price long-term gas sales agreements. We have some liquids production, but the vast majority are from those long-term fixed price gas sales agreements. We have a very long reserve and resource life. We have a very long contracted revenue stream, which is a multi-billion dollar contracted revenue stream. So even if we do nothing, we've got a contracted revenue stream in the billions of dollars. So The company itself as well, we have a very strong track record of delivering projects on time and budget. So once we start something, we've got a track record of getting it done and making it happen. And then the other key aspect is, whilst we have this large multi-billion dollar contracted revenue stream, we have spare capacity. We have the gas reserves and resources, and we have the spare capacity to go out and source additional contracts and deliver incremental revenue streams to the business. And that's certainly a core focus that we have within the business today.
So suffice to say, Andrew, you're feeling quite positive looking forward?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, clearly the macro environment for the last 12 months has been very challenging for many businesses. The challenges that we faced in terms of, if you take our main cash flow project in Nigeria, which actually supplies gas to power 10% of the country's power supply, which is not an insignificant undertaking. We rose to the challenge last year. We managed to increase our contribution to the nation's power supply at a time when others reduced their contributions. So we accepted the challenges, we took them on, and we more than overcame them. So I think in an environment where there's less macro pressure, which may or may not happen this year, we don't know yet, but may or may not happen this year, I think the opportunities for us to continue to grow, both in Nigeria and Niger and West Africa more generally, is clearly, there's clearly going to be many opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's huge. When you think about it, you're providing gas contributes to over 10% of Nigeria's daily average power generation, because Nigeria, it's like they've got like a 200 million population there, haven't they?
And it's the largest economy in Africa.
Yeah. Yes.
It's a very, very meaningful business that we have.
Yeah, it's very significant when you realise the population's involved there. Marvellous stuff. Okay, well, Andrew, as always, if someone's listening right now, likes the sound of what you're talking about, the progress you're making here, but are not yet following that story, give them three quick bullet point reasons to hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Yes, no problem. Okay, so look, I think the first thing to say is that the quality of our underlying businesses. So we have a highly cash generative, high margin business in Nigeria, which is generating very significant cash flows for our group. That in Niger, we have a high quality exploration and appraisal business. The R3 East development is going to come in and deliver significant growth for us. So both of those businesses, good embedded growth and fundamentally very, very good assets. I think secondly, the track record that we have of delivering our projects and managing our projects very, very well. I think that's a key differentiating factor. It's very, very clear from the numbers that we have published that we've taken on the Nigerian business and significantly improved it. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very clear from numbers we published in the past that in Niger, the projects that we've done have been delivered ahead of time, ahead of budget. So that is, from a cost control perspective, a project management perspective, I think that is a core skill set that we have within the business. And then I would say the last thing is, we're in an environment where companies like us will be exposed to a lot of opportunity. There's a lot of change going on in the industry, and we are in projects and areas and countries which require the services and the capabilities that we have. So over time, I expect that to enable us to access further opportunities. But to be very, very clear, our core businesses have very significant potential already embedded within them.
Marvellous stuff. Andrew, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is investor, businessman, John Storey. You're right, John. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, good morning to you and all of your followers.
Yeah, well, do you know what?
I'm good.
Yeah, I'll tell the backstory of this. I was traveling, and we stopped off a service station, and there was social distancing in there and all that. We had masks in the service station. So I remember that. A phone call from Graham, who we sort of both know as a broker, and said, there's a guy called John Story wants to have a chat with you. He liked your video on Gfinity. And I said, okay. And I thought, where do I know the name John Story from? I know the name John Story, and I didn't know why I'd known your name. And I realised I'd seen your name pop up in RNSs as a significant holder. And Graham said, he's quite a big guy in the market, so he takes some big chunks. And I thought, oh, right, I've not talked to you before. And so it turns out you're Gfinity, and you suggested some other companies, and you said, oh, I'll have a look at Escape and a while back. This is before you became NED, and you said, I quite like this company, but it's been bashed down due to COVID. Have a look at it. And so I looked at it and really liked it. So we just had some news out on Escape and last week. Acquisitions, Paris, France, franchise business, and you're all already holding 9.95%, and you've chucked an extra further, I think personally, over 400,000, and with related parties about close to 900,000. So first of all, John, thanks for coming on, and thanks for telling me about Escape, but why do you like it so much? What's your thoughts on it, and going forward here?
Well, the first thing I'd say, Justin, is it's very rare for me to join the board of a PLC. Mm. There's quite a lot of disadvantages to being on the board and not too many upsides. But in this particular instance, I've got a background in real estate. And the thing that really caught my attention with Escape Hunt is there was a golden opportunity presented by the demise of retail bricks and mortar property for them to acquire sites that previously were absolutely out of reach. Not only that, to acquire them on superb terms, sometimes peppercorn rents for a year or two, a percentage of sales going forward, which de-risks any kind of property deal. And this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. So I thought I could make a difference, and I hope I have. And I think we're still in the very early stages. I'm sure Escape Hunt will find more and more opportunities to exploit this this anomaly in retail property.
Yeah, yeah. And do you know what I liked? Apart from that side of it, which of course is the main part of the business, but a successful management company, are able to flip and move with the times. And during lockdown, they just came up with digital, and play at home. And now that's doing very well. And you realise, when they did that game back in December, 347 people in one game, 57 rooms. That's the physical estate right there in one game. And you think, that has huge potential, because I think it's like 80% gross margin, isn't it? And that's really testament, isn't it, to the management coming up with that and it flying straight away.
Well, I can tell you, as a board, I'm actually quite impressed with these people, and I didn't really expect to be, because it hadn't been a particularly successful company. Mm. But no, they're very smart guys, and they've seen this opportunity. The digital side, I'd say, is in for free at the moment. Yes, like many online businesses, it kind of took shape and accelerated with the COVID lockdown, but it's still in a very early stage, and of course, it's not difficult to take it global.
Mm, absolutely, yeah, yeah, yeah. And what's your thoughts on, lockdown at the moment? Of course, I looked at the valuations, recently, and it's still undervalued, but of course, you can forgive that due to the lockdowns. But I suppose you are a shrewd investor, and like you said, some of the best times to get involved in investments is when the outlook is a bit gloomy, isn't it,
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I've noticed with a lot of things, great ideas come along. I'm thinking of a few at the moment, and graphene. You probably remember that, the new super material.
Yeah,
there were tens, hundreds of millions. I wouldn't say wasted, but lost on developing graphene as a new super material. But now I'm on the lookout for graphene investments, because it is a super material. And the same applies to cybersecurity and fuel cells and CBD. I'm sure, you and your listeners, they can think of plenty of these industries.
Yeah.
That timing is the secret of life. And a lot of, being in very early is not always that great. it's getting in when you're at an inflection point where they're really going to start making money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So how many, I mean, I know, I think I'm more about three. How many companies do you hold a significant stake in?
I haven't counted them, but significant stake, not many. Probably six or eight.
it's quite a decent chunk, though. And so where did you start then, John? Because obviously you're not on social media. You know, your head is under the parapet there. And, you know, I started talking to you and I started noticing your name a lot more. I thought, oh, this guy, he's got a decent chunk of money invested in quite a few companies. And how did you start? And, you know, take us back. I know you're on a business, but so what started first? The business or investing or what?
No, business started first, and you know, you learn a lot from running your own businesses, and then after that, you know, you kind of realize that you don't have to go and start a business. You can find someone who's got a superb business, and you can buy a little stake in it.
When you started in the markets? Most people start at, you know, big caps, bigger caps, and that. Is that how you started?
No, I've always been at the small cap end of the market, where I think you stand a chance of finding companies that can, you know, that can go up multiple times. And okay, they're riskier, they're hard to find, but it's worth the search in my book.
Yeah, absolutely. And now, so as far as escapements, what's your thoughts? I mean, you've got to be, obviously, you know things. You know any deal, you can't say things and. That maybe you know that we don't know, but what's your thoughts over the next sort of, you know, maybe, because I always tell people, you know, all the lockdown, it's going to end next 2-3 months, and then you've got to look at the potential going forward. You're 6-12 months, 3 years on the line. What's your thoughts further down the line for Escape Hunt?
I think Escape Hunt are in a really good place, and as the lockdown lifts, the restrictions are released, I think you're going to see them doing exceptionally well. Key is to have a big enough estate of venues, you know, to turn the company really profitable. And they're there now. They've got enough. And with, as I said, with the demise of retail property, there are enough super sites that they can get on fabulous terms. So they're even, you know, they become even more profitable.
Yeah.
We the deal we did last week was to take over our French and Belgium distributor. We took them over on EBITDA of one. I mean, you know, that was a sensational deal. We didn't get much in the way of share price appreciation on Friday, but then it came out, unfortunately, a few delays, it came out late in the day on Friday. Not the best time to RNS good news. But, you know, there's investors are picking up on it today, and I think they'll continue to do so for a few weeks.
Yeah.
And the company, the board, are very ambitious, and they see the opportunity in front of them, both the digital side, which is in its infancy, and the you know, and the bricks and mortar side.
Yeah.
We've got franchisee in America already, so that will start to expand. The world is our oyster. There's a lot of opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I said on the weekend video that I did, covering it, I said, this is probably the only leisure company out there expanding in lockdown. You know, literally, their physical sites have gone up by 64% since March, before March last year. And also, they've expanded digital side. And so that is unknown, because most leisure companies are suffering, and in fact, cutting stores, cutting outlets, you know, laying off people, whereas it's the opposite. And they're doing what you said, you know, taking advantage in a downturn. And they come out stronger, and that's what's impressive, I think, you know?
That's, Justin, that's the time to do it, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Another company you talked to about... Sleep. Yeah, do you know what? Let's talk another company. I know you're very enthusiastic about another company, and I missed out here, but you say I haven't missed out, but it's Zoetic. And I've had the guys on the podcast, the previous CEO, and in fact the incarnation before that, because it went from oil and gas pretty much into CBD. Zoe is the ticker there. But they're up now. They've risen. This is one of the. There's not a lot of noise about this stock when I see social media. But if people look at the chart, it's done phenomenally well, and it's done like. If you look, this is the chart here. It's at 8 pence. Now it was back at 10 pence in August of last year. It's now 80 pence. So because it's an eight bagger there. So what's your thoughts there? Because now the market cap is up there. Why is this going so strongly? 158 million market cap. Why is it going so strongly? What's your thoughts, John?
Well, when I first came across it was only about a year ago, about this time last year. And, you know, Nick Tulloch was running the company then. He's an ex-stockbroker. He'd seen the opportunity to buy out Zoetic, which was in its infancy as a CBD company. Mm. CBD is the kind of safe side of the hemp and marijuana family. And it's not, it's been classified as non-narcotic recently by the European Court. So people can take this product, they can drive the car, they can work machinery. It's absolutely safe. But the product itself is extraordinary. I mean, it was first discovered in about 1940.
Yeah.
And I've got to say, I didn't believe the claims. It cures everything from insomnia, joint aches and pains, even cold sores and headaches. And the list goes on and on. And you've probably seen that the THC, that is the psychotic type side of the plant, is now being used extensively in medicines. There's going to be an explosion of that as well. But I see the CBD market, it's just starting out. People have said to me, well, you know, cannabis has been and gone. Yeah, the growing of it has. Everyone jumped on that bandwagon years ago. And many of them failed. There became a glut of product. But these guys that Nick introduced into what was Highlands Natural Resources, they are really knowledgeable. They've been working with the genetics of the plants for about 10 years. Mm. They also have 3 patents on how you extract the CBD isolate. I'm not a chemist, but apparently, know that they do have some very valuable patents on this, and they're producing various products under 2 brands. One of them is Zoetic, the company name, and this is oils and tinctures and creams, which are winning awards all over the place. But I didn't so much concentrate on that side. It's what interested me was the CBD smokes. These are a cigarette infused with the CBD isolate, and I don't smoke, but I've given packs to various people and talked to dozens of people who've tried it, and they say it is a sensational smoke, and it immediately has effects like releasing pain in joints, helping you sleep. Apparently you smoke one of these things of an evening and you sleep like a baby. So I got very, very interested in it, started to learn more and more about the company. And then back in about April last year, I got a call from the company after hours on a Friday night to say, you know, they were looking for a bit more investment. Mm-hmm. Not a huge amount. I think it was about 350,000 sterling. And I said, well, you know, you raised a bit of money in January. Why do you need more cash? And they said, well, you know, we're supplying into convenience stores. A lot of these are gas stations across America. Mm-hmm. And we've realized that we need a point of sale display. If you're in a gas station and you're on the shelf somewhere in the shop, the majority of people go in, pay for the petrol, leave the shop. They don't even see what's on the shelves. But if you can have a little point of sale display by the till, everyone's going to see it, and a few people are going to try it. And this is how you kind of build a customer base without spending a penny on marketing.
They wanted to
buy some stands, and so I said, well, that's a lot of stands, you know, £350,000. Well, you know, our first deal is 6,000 stores. And I was sitting in my office, and they'd already announced back in February that they were selling 2.5 packs of their smokes and 2.5 packs of their chews. This is like an alternative to a tobacco chew, which may not be that big in the UK, but it's huge in America. I just did the maths and thought, you know, they're going to be making $20, $30 a day per store, 6,000 stores. The numbers are huge. So I gladly invested. And that's the stock, I think, was around 10p then. You're right. And it has run to about 80p today. But you know what? I'd actually say they're far cheaper today at 80p than they were in those early days when I invested around 10p. And I didn't stop investing. I'm still investing now. I still think this is a stock that the sky is the limit. You may or may not notice that vape company called RLX listed on Friday, and the stock went straight to a valuation of $46 billion. Now, vapes are in a downtrend. You know, the vape market is kind of, there's been multi-billion dollar companies formed on the back of vape, but now people are deserting vape or CBD. CBD is far healthier. I'm not for 1 minute promoting it as a healthy product. You still smoke it, but it hasn't got nicotine. It hasn't got tar. It's made of herbs. I'm told, you know, they taste great as well. But people that enjoy smoking enjoy that actual habit of lighting up a cigarette and inhaling, you know, the hot smoke. So CBD, not by me, by many analysts now, is predicted to be the fastest growing market in the history of world economics. That's a pretty punchy claim.
Yeah.
And they're talking about it being $25 billion, or is it $1 trillion, in 3 or 4 years' time. So it's going to be a massive market. And this little company, which, as you mentioned earlier, it's just subterranean. It's unheard of. There's no broker research. I've never seen a word written on them in any newspaper or, you know, investment magazine. And that's why I think it's got the potential of being a real unicorn or a multi-billion dollar business.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me play devil's advocate, because I like an investment. And my issue is, when I do a search for CBD smokes, there's quite a lot of people out there doing them. And I think that, you know, the market seems very busy at the moment. And also, like I said, you've got excellent distribution deals. I have no idea how that translates. I'm a guy who needs to see some figures, you know, and I haven't seen any sales figures yet, so I don't know how that's going to translate. But they've got some brilliant distribution deals with a lot of outlets, like you say, across, in fact, US and Europe as well now. So I don't know how that's going to translate. But will it support? I mean, you know, let's say that you can value them on 5x revenue, for example, which is quite high. They still need to be doing 25 million a year to support that thing, or even behind that. So haven't they risen very quickly? I mean, when are we going to see some sales figures yet? And what about the competition?
Let me talk about the competition first. There are a lot of people making, not a lot, there are a few people making CBD smokes. I've had the company test a lot of these smokes that I've seen advertised, and every one of them so far has proved to be non-compliant. There's a lot of legislation related to CBD, and the two chief execs that run Zoetic have really deep knowledge of the compliance issues, all the regulatory hurdles, not just in the United States, in Europe and many other countries. And this is what sets them aside. It's their USP, if you like. The store groups they've won, and I've asked them the question because they have outperformed my best expectations, not in terms of sales. Sales are yet to come, but the distribution deals they've won, I've been staggered. You take a brand like Juul that was one of the most successful vape brands in America. They worked for years to get a trial with ATAC. That's this store group that's got 88,000 stores across every state in America. And the guys at Zoetic approached them with their product, and the vetting period took 8 or 9 months because they go very deeply into both the company and the products, and particularly something like CBD, which is, there are compliance issues. And the two chief execs, their aspiration was to get a trial in maybe 500 or 1,000 stores possibly. And to their surprise and my astonishment, the company went straight for full distribution and said, no, we want to introduce you to all 88,000 stores. Now, that's going to take time. It will take 3 or 4 years to roll out to 88,000 stores. Mm. That's an enormous number. And if you do a little calculation of a, you know, 3 or 4 packs of each per store per day, you're getting over $1 billion of profits, not sales. These are profits. And you know, they're in New Age Bev as well, which is another high-profile U.S. company. They've checked them out to the nth degree before they adopt the Chill brand. And likewise, the European distributors, they're big companies. They've got a lot of reputational risk if they sell a product that is non-compliant and causes their retailers a problem. But they've signed up 2 distributors covering 17 of the main European countries. So in that short space of time, they already have pretty much full distribution across Europe and full distribution across the United States. Mm. And I can't see what's going to stop this little company from growing their profits to in excess of $1 billion. Yeah. Yeah, it'll take 4 years, 5 years maybe. But I look back at things like Fevertree. Incidentally, I'm not that smart. I miss Fevertree. I didn't believe they would ever take market off people like Schweppes.
Yeah.
I was totally wrong. They came in with their flavored tonics and they took the market by storm. You know, they became a £4 billion company quite quickly. Mm. And I think Zoetic's in a similar position, but their market's 100 times bigger.
Yeah. But you know what? I like it and I trust you completely, just because it's run so hot of late. I can't. I've hardwired myself to not chase a hot stock. So, you know, because that's the reason why, the number one reason why people don't make money, of course, they pay a price that's risen too quickly. So I'm going to have to wait. And every time I see it, it doesn't. The momentum very strong. It hardly ever comes. It has a few days, down days, and it carries on. So, yeah, but all hot stocks, you know, no matter what they are, do have a breather now and again. So I'm going to wait for the breather. And but I trust your judgment on this, John. I may miss out here. I don't know. Part of investing is like that, isn't it? Sometimes you say, I may miss out on it if it goes any further, if it doesn't fit my criteria. But yeah, I trust you on that. But I'll keep watching it. It's very interesting. And my initial thoughts, you know, you've pushed them aside and with your research. And so I'm impressed by that. But you've done very well there. Just quickly before we... Go on, sorry. Go on, John.
Yeah, no, I absolutely get that. Mm. And, you know, and that's your style, and it served you very well. Getting in a very, very early stage is very risky. You know, yeah. The market always says it's all about the execution risk. And they've, you know, these guys have now got to start ramping up production. They've got to start getting all the logistics in place. It's a big operation.
Yeah.
But that is a path that's been trodden by thousands of companies, and it's a mechanical process, and you can buy in expert distribution managers and logistics managers, and I think they will, but we won't know whether I'm right or wrong for a couple of 3 years yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, quickly, before we leave, a couple of people, I mentioned you on the weekend video and the weekend podcasting. John's come on the podcast. And, of course, you do hold Gfinity stock. And they said, oh, ask him about Gfinity, because there's not been a lot of news from Gfinity of late, is there, really? But you're still, I assume you're still quite bullish because you own a decent chunk of stock.
I do have a big position in it, and I am very bullish on it. I've been following the company for a while, and I did invest at, I think it was 4.5 when they did a placing 2 years back. And my timing was wrong then. Mm. And the company was squandering quite a lot of money. Their overheads were huge. And the crunch kind of came again very early last year. They brought in a new chief exec.
Yeah.
Probably met. And he's ex-Heineken. I've met him on Zoom calls and what have you. And I'm very impressed with him. John Clark, He got hold of that company in a style that I like. He ripped the overheads from $8.5 million down to $3 million. That is a serious turnaround. He concentrated on profit, and he told the market, I'm going to make the thing profitable. And by Q1 this year, it will be profitable. And I think it is now. And it's in a really hot space. The e-gaming space is huge. We've got a top chief exec. There's not much news because they are in, you know, as you'll be aware, they're in this offer period, which is really he's examining the options for the company. And it's hard to say where that will end. But I do believe it will create value for shareholders, whatever he does with it, because he's such a smart guy.
No, I like that. The fact that he, you know, everyone knew, I watched G4ND for years, like I said, same as you probably, for years, but I wanted to, you know, esports is good and they're associated with big brands, but they were burning lots of cash, like you say, and it needed a change. And John was the guy that came in and changed it and say, right, and nailed, you know, his colours of the flag, said, we're going to be profitable here. And like I said, it's done, it's changed, it's now generating real value. And do you know what? Just looking at my kids, I wouldn't have a clue how hot this space is, because my kids are 7 and 10, and that's all they want. They don't look at TV. They don't care about terrestrial TV. They play games, and they watch YouTube of gamers, you know, playing against each other. And so I thought, it's not going to get any smaller, and the game's getting better, you know, so, and the prize money and teams are getting bigger, and these esports stars will soon be on par with real sports stars. So it's just a trend. It's very strong, isn't it? And I think, you know, it's a good company to hold. So it's in the right space, you know.
Well, I agree with you, and I'll be watching their progress with great interest.
Marvellous stuff. John, thanks for coming on, and hopefully we'll catch up again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. In fact, the communications part of that is having a problem because your smartphone is backed up, is it, Al?
Just Brand. Yeah, it's just Brand today. The smartphone died, absolutely died. So do you know what? It's actually
maybe... You said to me, though, it was 4 years old. You can't have an iPhone 4 years old these days. It's well dated. It can't support
that. It's a Samsung. Samsung.
Well, you know, rubbish in there. I thought you'd be an Android guy. I understand why you pump some of the rubbish you do now on the podcast, because you're a Samsung Android guy. You've got to be a top... I think you're in a brand, Zan. You've got to go, iPhone, surely. That's the brand. Apple.
I'm a contrarian investor, because I'm talking to you. I'm actually doing the podcast on my iMac. Sitting next to me on the desk as well, I have my MacBook Air. And also next to that...
And Samsung
now
has let you down.
Yeah, Samsung's let me down, exactly. So I now have this old BlackBerry, which I just keep as a spare. And it's such a nice phone, and I just love the QWERTY keyboard. It's just really nice to use. You think, you know, why did BlackBerry let it go? It's just still a really nice phone, you know?
People didn't want it, did they? It wasn't very adaptive. That's the trouble, see, tech moves fast. You can't have a four-year-old phone. You might as well use a brick or something. It doesn't work. You've got to move on every couple of years, really, haven't you?
It is weird, though, isn't it? I'm looking through all the icons on the BlackBerry, and they look so dated, you know. But the Samsung, you know, was up to date, and I've just there's a new one on its way, which I've had. I mean, you know, a phone is a phone is a phone, isn't it, really?
And then, no.
Okay, maybe not, right? But when you look at the tech, yeah, maybe it's moved on, and I think this one will be better, and once I get everything loaded back on, then it's back to normal. But it's weird, because normally I'm sitting there and the WhatsApp's pinging away and stuff is going on, but
let me ask you a question. Why didn't you go with an iPhone then? Why did you go with a Samsung? Because you got iMacs and stuff and all that, you know.
It's a weird thing. I mean, my wife has an iPhone. The rest of my children have got iPhones. So they're all kitted out with them. But I was going to go for it, and then somebody had a Samsung. I said, well, before you do, take a look at this, because I had the BlackBerry before that. So I looked at the Samsung.
Was the person who said that a Samsung dealer?
No, it's a friend. It's a friend, you know. And he said iPhones too. He just said, "Well, what do you think?" And I just really like the way it works. And the camera is superb on the Samsung. I mean, really, really good. And also I found it integrated quite well. You know, I integrated the diaries and everything, no problem at all. So I'm sure once I get the new one through, it'll be fine. But so there you go. So I'm just Brand today, a bit down on the communication front, but normal service will be resumed.
Right. Let's talk about stocks. What's the first one up?
Well, we spoke about this. I've got Written down here on the 24th of February 2020, and I think we have done a review on it since, but we in any event, I'm going to discuss it again because they've delivered a remarkable performance throughout the year. The company is Watches of Switzerland, WOSG, and so as the name implies, these are luxury watches. They're a luxury watch retailer in the UK, and they have a presence in the US as well across selected US regions. Something like 140 plus branches worldwide, and they've recently opened up a Rolex room at this one of the stores in London, as well as several other stores to boot. And of course, they retail Rolex, Cartier, Omega, Tag Heuer, Breitling, and so on and so forth. Swatch, yes, that's right. Yeah, but they have outlets. They have outlets through all the major jewelry store channels, and of course their own their concessions in store as well in some of the larger stores. Quite significantly, in October, a chap called Ian Carter joined them as chairman, and Ian is the CEO of Hilton Hotels Worldwide. So that's a very strong appointment, I think. And, you know, obviously, aside from his experience at the luxury end of the market, he's got all of the channels that he can plug the brand and the stores and the concessions straight into. But I think what's impressed me most is the financial performance of the group throughout the year. And it's worth bearing in mind at this stage that when the company started out, major shareholders got involved straight away. So you had BlackRock taking 7% stake, Apollo Management took a large stake, JP Morgan have recently come on board with a 5% stake, Ameriprise have come on with a 5% stake. So really strong institutional holdings in this company. So when COVID first hit last year, the company the full year ends at ends on 26th of July, and the company said its revenue guidance, or retains revenue guidance, around the 809 to the 812 million mark. Actually came in on the year with 810 million, recorded strong trading through the year, and EBITDA grew 13.5% to 78 million sterling. And indeed, quarter one, at that point, the revenues had fallen, but the company was still very confident of the outlook for the full year. And they were projecting revenues of 840 to 860 million sterling for the year. At that stage, debt was between 90 to 110 million, so quite a high, debt mountain to negotiate as well. But there was also 110 million of headroom with various lenders. So we progress through the year. We get to quarter one. We get to the quarter one numbers in October. The actual results, and they projected 151 million. The actual result came in 20% higher at 202 million. During that time, they'd also acquired another US retailer, Analog Shift, a purveyor of vintage watches, revised the revenue outlook for the year to 880 to 910 million, EBITDA flat, and also debt around that around the 80 to 100 million level as well. Trading momentum was really improving, was as noted by the CEO Brian Duffy. We then come to December. We have the first quarter one update, robust first half, 414 million, EBITDA up 26.6% to 52 million, a pre-tax profit of 36 million from a 9 million loss previously. But what's most impressed me is the debt has been reduced from 92 million to 22.5 million. So that's a massive performance. And if you look at the share price performance of the company literally since March, you know, when everything fell last year, it's just been top right hand corner stuff all the way. And when we first spoke about it, the company had a valuation of 900 million. It's now got a valuation of 1.5 billion sterling. Shares are trading at 645p, just off the year low of 680p. Again, Brian Duffy, looking forward, said that the revenues had grown 12% in the 7 weeks to December the 13th, opening up new London stores. So the company has been a real cash cow during the lockdown and COVID, and they're very bullish on the outlook for 2021. Also, of course, they're retailing online too, so that helps. But you know, you would think a store like this would be much more affected by COVID, but a really strong performance, and I think still a very investable proposition.
Again, see the dash for cash there. It's all about timing, especially watches.
It is, yes. Yeah. I see what you did there, Jess.
Yeah. Do you know what it struck me? If you work for them, you could never be late, could you, for work? You could never be late for any meeting at all. It would be dreadful. And say, you've got a watch. Don't say you haven't got a watch, because you have. You should have been here beforehand. So it's
But you could say, well, I've actually got this. I spent all my life savings and bought from your store this vintage timepiece, which actually loses about 5 minutes every couple of hours. So, but I love to wear it because it's so valuable. That's why I'm late for the meeting.
You could say, I spent so much money on this watch to sell my car. I'm using public transport now, and it's hard work. So. Cool. Okay. Yeah, they've done very well. Look at the chart from the Dash for Cash. Went down to around about 170 odd. Now it's at 645. That's not the time, by the way. It's not quarter to seven. That's the price. 6:45. Cool. Come on. What's next, Al?
Righto. So we have spoken about Vocerin on numerous occasions. Just want to speak to them following the half-year interims. And it's interesting to note that Vocerin generates a variety of opinions across the financial community, some good, some bad, and some journalists and some market commentators in particular are absolutely scathing of the board and management. But nonetheless, I think the technology is very important. It's going to be
scathing?
I think there have been aspersions cast about the CEO Neil Rickett, who most recently, I have to say, sold a big chunk of shares as part of his divorce settlement. So, and of course, you know, every CEO, whenever they come in to sell shares, if it does have an impact on the company, or if the company isn't doing as well as people hope, then they will naturally go out and slate them. But I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we all have lives to lead as well. The CEO is doing his best running the company, and if he's got to sell to raise some money to pay his ex-wife off, then that's the way he's got to do it. It's you know, we've seen this before with.
When did he sell those then? When did he have to pay? You know,
it was announced. It was announced with the interims on the 21st last week.
Okay, well, that's sad. Yeah, cool. Marvellous. Yeah. Right, go on then. Crack on then. Tell us about it. I think Neil's come on very soon. He's on quite often anyway, but I think he's coming on very soon.
Yeah, well, that's it. Well, I think we've seen this with other CEOs. I mean, Alistair Smith, the CEO of Acta, sold some shares because he needed the money to buy a house. And, of course, that had an impact. And everyone was moaning on the boards. But, you know, life's to lead. Life's to lead. I think you've got to judge those in perspective. But anyway, Vocerin, they are graphene solutions. They have a number of applications. 2D technology, that was the company that won the contract with Rolls-Royce last year to develop a graphene application for aerospace and defense applications. So that's hugely exciting, and obviously we're going to hear about that. But there's the 2D technology actually develops the micro-layer graphene nanine and the enhanced polymer version of polygreen, and also a nitride nanopowder as well. But all of these go into various materials to strengthen. It's used, of course, in vacuum packaging. We've got vacuum molding, Siroma, that use injection molding and vacuum forming. It's also used, of course, in construction as well. They can use the graphene in concrete for construction. We then have applications for graphene inks. That's, of course, for printing PCBs and the graphene, so high performance conductive inks. And then, of course, defense applications, tungsten carbide to be used in drill tips and weaponry and all the rest of it. So the company has moved forward. The Rolls-Royce contract, of course, was key. We then discovered last year in November that the Ankara University in Turkey had undertaken some research and discovered that graphene actually inhibits viral infection. And of course, it possesses antiviral qualities when doped with metal oxide nanoparticles, as developed by 2D Tech. From that, of course, there's the potential application for COVID, for masks and applications in that area. The company won a $2 million product development agreement with the MOD in November last year as well. And they appointed Stephen Hodge, who was former head of research, as chief technology officer across the group in January 2. So on the interims, revenues fell to $3 million from $4.5 million previously. Graphene sales rose to $350,000 from $70,000. The company's got $2.5 million cash at the bank, larger loss before tax, but it's also acquired, made a number of steps forward, acquired the IP from Hanwha Aerospace in South Korea. And indeed, the company said that it expected to see significant commercial progress in 2021. So, Basarian, work in progress. The shares are somewhere in the middle of the recent trading range at 56p, gives it a value of 106 million. So, yeah, we're looking forward to a strong year for Basarian, VRS.
Well, we're looking forward to a strong year in every company, aren't we, really?
No. Oh, we are. We are indeed. Yes, yes. But I think you know, Vasarian's probably got a lot to prove to investors. But I hope we're going to hear some news on that Rolls Royce development before too long, because I think that could be key. And obviously, the potential range of applications for graphene is enormous. And you know, just it can be used in so many areas: lightweight, you know, strength for construction, for vacuum forming, and all sorts of applications.
Yes, and probably in watches too, you know.
Yeah, maybe in watches, yes. Yes.
Cool. Great. All right, marvellous stuff. Anything else, Al?
Yeah, this is a company that I did a bit of research on over the weekend. It's obviously we often hear, we're hearing about gold and the relentless drive forward in the gold price and what it's meaning for small mining companies in regard to potential for exploration and also dormant projects that have basically been sitting there for ages and haven't been used. So this is a company called Lexington Gold. LEX is the epic code. Shares are trading at 3.9p, just off year highs, giving a market cap of just on 10 million at the moment. This is the company changed its name from Richland Resources in December. It then acquired 51% ownership of four gold exploration projects in South Carolina. And of course, South Carolina is a prime location for mining. It's historically, it was the biggest gold producing state until California overtook it in the early noughties. It's also, you know, from a point of view of access, from a point of view of logistics, transportation, and so on, energy and support, it's a prime location. So it has this joint venture, 51% ownership. The other 49% is owned by a South Carolina-based company called Uwari Resources. The area or the projects have potential for a number of reasons. There have been a number of projects developed and sold off recently, but the most notable one is the Haile, spelled H-A-I-L-E, the Haile Gold property in South Carolina, which was bought by a company called Ramarco in 2007. It was called Haile because it was discovered by a chap called Ben Haile in 1827. They attempted to mine it, and there's been various activity throughout the 20th century. But it was really only 2007 when Ramarco got involved, using modern mining methods, that they realised there was an awful lot there. They developed the asset and then sold it, lock, stock and barrel, to Oceana Gold for $856 million in 2015. So, you know, that was obviously a huge return for the shareholders there. So in the area, you've got the Haile mine, which is 4.5 million ounces, troy ounces of gold. Ridgeway, which is 1.5 million ounces, which is owned by Rio Tinto. And the Bearite Hill, which is 600,000 ounces of gold. Now, there are four projects, as I say. I'm not going to go into all of them, but they're called the Jones Keystone projects, of which there are three. Then the Jennings Pioneer project, Carolina Bell, and Argo projects, all of which are at various stages. But the Jennings Pioneer project is the one where there's activity at the moment. The Jennings Pioneer project was discovered many years ago, and it's approximately 600 metres from the Barite Hill mine, which, of course, is the 600,000-ounce mine I mentioned. From a geological standpoint, it's potentially a satellite deposit, and Jennings Pioneer has also yielded the best grades from sampling across the block of licences and projects that are owned by Lexington. 92 grams per tonne is the best return there. So currently there is a helicopter electromagnetic survey underway this month. Last month it's been completed. Processing, modelling, and interpretation from that are due in a month or so. It's the first time such a survey has been conducted in the area, but it will. It will lead on to further surveys in the first half of the year, further aerial surveys being flown over the other projects. So it's in the ground. Clearly, the projects are at various stages in development. Very strong board. Ed Nealon is the chairman, 46 years experience, founder of Aquarius Platinum, and co-founder with Melissa Sturgis, who you'll know. Just she's of course Ananda and Aquarius Platinum. So Ed Nealon and Melissa Sturgis co-founded Sylvania Platinum as well. Bernard Olivier is the CEO. He's 13 years experience in the industry. Worked at Tanzanite One, of course. He was also on the team at Besant Resources. Bernard Olivier was on the team responsible for developing the Jork resource in the ground of 3.9 million ounces of gold. A very strong team, and right at the beginning of its curve. Interesting point. I was talking to somebody in this industry on Friday, and we were saying that a few years ago, if you were looking at a microcap resource company, they'd normally be around the 2 to 2.5 million mark. That would be the start point. That seems now to be between 7 to 10 million, and that just seems to be the norm, and that's on the back of the rise in precious metals. So if you take that yardstick, we've got Lexington valued at just on 10 million sterling. So a very good starting point for high potential projects in South Carolina.
Yes. Not for me. Thanks, Al. Not for me. Thanks very much.
Not even with the Bazant connection.
No, not even that.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go.
I don't even remember what was the company?
Lexington Gold, LEX.
That's plenty there. That's plenty.
Yeah.
No, listen, the gold is a good play. All these days, I think I'd be more. I'd prefer to buy Bitcoin, I think, rather than gold now.
Well, Bitcoin, gold, gold, Bitcoin. You've got to.
What are you doing there? Are you just saying one and then swapping it around for the other? What is that?
I think
Bitcoin, gold, gold, Bitcoin. Bitcoin, gold, gold, Bitcoin.
Well, you can actually get to that. There is a cryptocurrency that is it's called gold or crypto gold or something. And I think there's some.
Yeah, that's someone just trying to cash in on the both of them, isn't there?
Yeah. Well, you've got to have a position in both, I think. But what percentage of your assets you put into those, obviously, only you can decide, dear listener.
Yeah, okay. Lovely stuff. Al, thanks for that. And we'll speak you next week, unless we all die.
Well, I hope we don't, Jess. Very happy to say that my dear parents are going to receive their jab this week, which is excellent news. So we are progressing. We are being vaccinated slowly but surely.
Yeah, well, do you know what? A friend of mine, in fact, on the weekend podcast, Steve, his parents in Cardiff heard that there was a spare Pfizer vaccine going, so they queued up down the, not far from them, and got jabbed. So, anyway, did no appointment. And that's happened. They're very very cognizant now of you know, wasting any, you know, because they get the these booked appointments and some people don't turn up. I don't know why they don't turn up, but some people don't turn up. So they have spare Pfizer or some spare vaccine at the end of the day. And, of course, it's worth thousands of pounds, isn't it? I mean, it's worth millions. It's worth a life. It's worth a life, you know, let's be honest. Why is it, we shouldn't have any spare? We shouldn't be throwing any away. So they spread out across the community. If you know anyone in this age group, you know, please come along and we'll just jab you right here and now and we'll fill in the cards and so we'll have you on the register. So it's a good thing, I think, going on. So you shouldn't try and waste any of it. I don't understand people not turning up. Maybe they realise, I don't know.
But, well, the thing is, of course, with the Pfizer, it's got to be stored at minus 88 degrees centigrade, you know. So, I have to say I'm slightly concerned to have something that has to be stored at minus 88 degrees centigrade injected into me, but there we go.
It's not, I told you this last time, it's not that. It's not that cold when it goes into you.
No, of course, I know.
But it's defrosted, that's why it's so complex. They keep it at minus 70, then they've spent like 5 days defrosting it, which is annoying.
And then whereas the AstraZeneca version is stored in the fridge.
It's exactly room temperature. Yeah, come out, you know, but that's quite cold as well, though. No?
Yeah, yeah.
No, but I think they let it get to room temperature.
It can mean they're alongside the milk. Yeah,
lovely. Yes. You know, it's a short-sighted doctor picking up the milk and injecting milk into people. And adding those to the figures, we've done loads. In fact, we've done a lot more than we thought we had vaccine for. That, it turned white in the fridge, though. That's milk, doctor, is it? Oh, well, I don't know, there was 1,000 people today with milk. Yeah. They seemed fine when they left. Okay.
There's some people moving in the car park, by the way, but apart from that.
All right. Well, Al, thanks for that. We'll speak to you next week.
Just been this week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Gene Drive at four. Remote Monitor Systems. Gene Drive is up 23.81% to 52 pence. Remote Monitor Systems down 6.5%, 2.8. At three, Synergen up 13.35 to 192. At two, Ridgecrest up 7% to 3, and Orosur Mining, that's up 3.7% to 27.50. Okay, top five most read RNSs are as follows. At five, Orosur Mining, Columbia update. At four, Asia Met, termination of SPA for acquisition of Indocal. That's dropped by about 30% today. At three, Boohoo Group, strategic acquisition. Of course, they're buying Debenhams, not the stores. Lots of jobs going there, sadly. But the website and the infrastructure there, the assets there. At two, Remote Monitor Systems, exercise of warrants. And at one, Synergen, inclusion of US Active 2 trial. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.